Hi, and thank you for joining me today for this edition of Senior Talk. The 2022 Alzheimer's Disease Facts and Figures Report from the Alzheimer's Association revealed challenges that both medical professionals and the general public face in diagnosing and understanding mild cognitive impairment, which is categorized by subtle changes in memory and thinking. At any time, if you want to learn more about Alzheimer's disease and memory loss, visit www.alz.org, or you can call their helpline at 1-800-272-3900. 800-272-3900. We are discussing what mild cognitive impairment is and what, if anything, can be done about it. My guests are Drew Wyman, Executive Director of the Alzheimer's Association Main Chapter, and Amy Angelo, Program Manager at the Alzheimer's Association Main Chapter. Thank you both so much for calling in today. I appreciate it. It's such an important topic that's relevant to so many people.
Carol, thank you so much for having us. We're so thrilled to be here.
Drew, I will start with you. What is mild cognitive impairment and how prevalent is it in Maine?
Well, mild cognitive impairment is kind of what it sounds like. It's more subtle changes in memory. It might be something like forgetting some basic things, forgetting where your keys are, forgetting something you were talking about. And it's a subtle thing. Symptoms are pretty easy to miss. And that's why we want to raise awareness about it. You have to go through MCI in order to get to Alzheimer's disease. However, if you have MCI, it doesn't mean you're going to get Alzheimer's disease. And that's the good news, right? So it's something that it could be caused. It could be a preclinical to Alzheimer's. It could be caused by Alzheimer's. But there's other factors that might cause it.
So that was a question. If you have mild cognitive impairment, is it an automatic given that eventually you will get Alzheimer's? And I'm hearing no.
The answer is no. You're not guaranteed to get Alzheimer's disease. And that's why early diagnosis is so important. So we want to raise awareness of it so that people will go talk to their doctor, or their PCP, and get evaluated. Because it could be something like a vitamin deficiency. Could be sleep related. It could be a side effect of medication or other things. So you want to rule that out.
So when you say maybe forgetting things, I hear people say all the time, mostly wives, that friends of mine say, my husband doesn't listen. He doesn't remember any conversations we have. He just doesn't listen to me. Is he really not listening? Or because I know that's a thing. Or maybe does he really just not remember the conversation? And is that a red flag?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, MCI stuff, MCI changes don't really affect daily living. If there's something that's affecting daily living, it's happening constantly. That could be a red flag for something bigger. But Amy, you can talk about exactly that. What is normal aging versus what's like a warning sign of something bigger?
Sure.
Thanks, Amy. Let's do that.
Okay, great. Yeah. So dementia is not, I think it's important to say this, dementia is not a normal sign of aging. It's not part of the normal process. And so we have an educational program called Know the 10 Signs of Dementia or Alzheimer's. And that discusses what the normal signs of aging are versus signs of dementia or what possibly could be Alzheimer's. And some of those might look like, Drew mentioned forgetting where your keys are, right? We all do that. But someone who might be moving towards dementia or Alzheimer's, they don't have the ability to retrace their steps to locate their keys. So I come into the house, I throw down my jacket, I go into the kitchen, I get a glass of water. And I'm like, oh gosh, my keys are not where they're supposed to be. I could retrace my steps. I came into the house. I went into the kitchen. I got a glass of water. My keys must be in the kitchen, right? So it could also look like, you normally drive a specific route to the grocery store or the church for years, and then one day you get lost or you don't know how you got there. That could be a sign of dementia or Alzheimer's.
And what about forgetting normal conversations? Is it just because we perhaps are so busy that there's so much information coming at us, way more than there used to be?
Absolutely could be. Yes. Yes. The amount of information that we process in a moment or, you know, in a day is, you know, so much that we can't possibly retain everything that's coming at us. But again, it's when we are when it affects our daily lives, when we're unable to manage our finances anymore, or, you know, forgetting people's names and faces. Like calling, say, a watch, a hand clock, that could be a sign, right? When it's affecting how we operate in our daily lives.
So it's really more, those are pretty specific things. So it's really more than losing the keys or forgetting an appointment or not remembering that you discussed a week ago what you were having for Sunday dinner.
Or maybe forgetting what your keys do.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
What is this thing for? I forget. Or a can opener. What does that device on my kitchen counter do?
Okay. Go ahead, Drew.
Just to go back, you asked about prevalence MCI in Maine. And the report estimates that 15% of adults older than 60 have MCI. So that could be extrapolated into a state. And so that's like 10 million people in the U.S. have MCI estimated.
Is if someone, first of all, do people typically or not see their medical professionals if they're noticing that they have that, or is the fear so strong that they just avoid it and don't talk about it?
Yeah, that was a problem that came out in the survey as well. So the way this report was established is it was two surveys sent out to the general public and some PCPs. And some of the findings were interesting. It was people were less likely to, you know, seek a diagnosis or even if they knew they had MCI, they were reluctant to go to the doctor for fear that there might not be a treatment or anything they can do.
When they do go to a physician or a nurse practitioner or whoever their provider is, do they get misdiagnosed often with MCI, is there a way to know exactly what this is?
That's a really tricky thing, right? Because so the way it's just, like I said, it's kind of subtle changes in memory and thinking. So the doctor, you really would want to go to a neurologist or a memory specialty clinic, and they can, you know, they would detect it with tests. Some would be survey tests. It'd be very good to bring a loved one with you. Like you use the example of a husband not listening to their spouse. Is this something he's done his whole life, or is this a relatively new thing in the last month? Have you moved? You know, what are some of the social factors? And then they would dig into more of the specific tests. So they do like blood imaging. There's lots of biomarker tests that are coming out. There's more and more coming down the pike, which is very exciting. But they could do amyloid imaging, which is something the Alzheimer's Association funded back in the day. And they'd be looking for plaques, the hallmark pieces of Alzheimer's disease. They could do stuff with spinal fluid, and there are tests they could do. The good part is if you get an early diagnosis, then you can get into a clinical trial. You might be able to try a new medication that's approved for clinical trials. So,
how versed are your generic PCPs in looking for this or doing this? Because I know there was something in the report saying that they weren't totally comfortable with that either.
I have to look up to see the exact percent, but it said...
It surprised me.
Yeah, it was...
And they can't know everything. I do understand that, and things change all the time.
Right.
But if... And geriatricians, while you're looking for those numbers, geriatricians are few and far between in this state, even though we are the oldest state in the nation. So how is that addressed?
I have the statistic right here. More than three-quarters of primary care physicians, 77%, say MCI due to Alzheimer's is difficult to diagnose. And half, 51%, do not feel comfortable diagnosing it.
So where does that leave someone who perhaps has this? And let's say they're in rural Maine and they can't come to Bangor or Portland to find a neurologist.
Right.
What do they do?
That is the problem, right? And that's what this, the survey shows us, is we need to increase the workforce to meet the rising demand. So we know that, there's 29,000 people in Maine living with Alzheimer's right now. We know that's projected to increase by more than 20% in the next few years. By 2025, that's expected to grow another 6,000 people, right? So there are 36 geriatricians in Maine, I believe, which would mean a 97% increase to meet the demand by 2050, by mid-century. The other piece is that I want to point out while we're on the topic of this, there were of the survey, there's 20 US states that were termed dementia neurology deserts, meaning that means there's less than 10 neurologists per 10,000 people projected to have dementia. And not surprisingly, Maine is one of those states. So you need to go to a neurologist, you need to go to a specialist to get a proper, especially if your PCP is not comfortable diagnosing MCI. The other piece is we need to educate PCPs, and they're the ones on the front lines. They need to understand what best practices are.
It feels very scary to me, all of this. We need to take a break. If you want to learn more about the Alzheimer's Association, log on to alz.org or call 1-800-272-3900. We will be back with Drew Wyman and Amy Angelo right after this. Stay with us. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk. Amy Angelo, Drew Wyman from the Alzheimer's Association Maine chapter, discussing mild cognitive impairment. So we've established that there are very few physicians who are really comfortable doing this, and you need a neurologist, and they are even fewer and further between. So it feels almost like it's on us. What can we do to, I don't want to say self-treat because always see a doctor, but in the meantime of trying to get into one, what can we do? Are there things we can do to help preserve our memory?
Well, yeah.
And to fix this, if we're having it, to make it go away?
It's that, the old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? So whatever you can do to get ahead of something is good. But so we know some of the pathology of Alzheimer's presents itself 20 or is sorry, let me back up. It is in the body 20 years before symptoms are presented, right? So that's a hard one.
You are just full of good news.
But the good news is, yes, lifestyle changes can significantly reduce your risk. And it's all the stuff we've talked about. Now there's data showing the proof of the theories that what's good for the heart is good for the brain. So good blood circulation, staying fit, getting exercise on a daily basis, staying social, maintaining your cognitive reserve. We know there's a correlation that people that have higher education levels have lower risk. If you're continually challenge your mind, maybe learn something new, learn a new language, learn a musical instrument. Those kind of things have shown there's some benefits. But the biggest thing is controlling blood pressure and keeping, trying to get regular exercise and staying socially active.
Exercise seems to be, I interview a lot of physicians, and that's just a mantra that they chant constantly. And not being a big exerciser, I always kind of want to know why. Is it because the circulation is better, and so your brain gets more oxygen? Is that
oxygen,
the reason?
Nutrients? Yeah. Yep. Right. That's the theory.
Okay. And what about alcohol, smoking, overweight, all of those things?
Those are all also correlated, with higher risks. Diabetes, obesity is correlated with higher risks. So yeah, you want to control all that stuff. There was a study published a few years ago that showed keeping your blood pressure if you have high blood pressure, you get medication and keep it at a reasonable level, it can reduce your risk significantly. So that was a study that came out a few years ago. I can't remember the name of the study. So there's constant clinical trials and things out there. There's lifestyle clinical trials. There's the US Pointer Study and the Finger Study, which you can see on our website, or you could just Google US Pointer Study or Finger Study. And those are lifestyle lifestyle clinical trials to see if changes in lifestyle reduce risk.
If this has possibly been in our bodies for 20 years, these symptoms, and someone's listening and thinking, what's the point? Because if I've got it, I've got it. I'm just going to wait it out. What do you say to that?
Well, it's worth trying to do anything to prevent it, right? So you may have the gene. Just because you have a gene doesn't mean you're going to get it. You might be at a higher risk, but it's not worth giving up. Also, if you do get a diagnosis early on, especially, your life is not over. I feel like there's a common perception where people just say, oh, I'm diagnosed, there's nothing I can do, I'm going to just give up. And that's not the case at all, because in the early stages, you can still do a lot of amazing things and live a very meaningful life. That's one of the big things we teach our caregivers. So people get into a support group, and you can connect with other caregivers going through a similar thing. Make excellent friendships, get socially active, and you know, there is a silver lining.
If you have mild cognitive impairment, can you, though, get rid of it? Can you make it go away by doing these changes or slow the progression? So if you're 65 and you're starting it when you're 75 or 80, it's still where it is because you have made these changes. And I know it's all subjective.
That's a great question. Yeah. And that's something to discuss with your doctor, but that's the big point of the big reason for early intervention. Go to the doctor, get checked out, and the doctor may give you a big dose of exercise as a prescription, or look at your individual situation. And like I was saying, people with high cognitive reserve will cope a lot better than people without.
And how would someone get that high cognitive reserve? Let's say, I have no idea. How would someone get that?
It's that, you know, educate yourself, stay mentally active, learn new things, try new things, and stay socially active.
Clinically, is that because learning new things redevelops pathways in the brain so that it strengthens?
Right. Right.
I'm not a physician, but that it makes it just improves your brain mechanism.
Yeah, like exercising a muscle, right? It changes your thought processes, and it's your exercise in your brain. And we have a whole program, 10 Ways to Love Your Brain. I think it's things like that. It's like quit smoking, get enough sleep, adopt a heart-healthy diet is another one. Stay socially active, learn new things, wear a helmet. We know that traumatic brain injury is correlated to dementia and Alzheimer's. So things like
that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Again, helpline 1-800-272-3900, ALZ.org is the website. Stay with us. More to come. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back with Senior Talk discussing Alzheimer's and mild cognitive impairment. So there is no such thing as memory loss and aging, correct? And yet people think that. And at least once a week, I have a friend or a colleague say to me, they've forgotten something, and they say, oh, it's hell getting older. Is it? Is that a thing? Or is it, do you have any memory loss naturally as you age, or does it always depend on something else?
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't have to be hell getting older, but there's some natural stuff. Obviously, things slow down, and there's some typical age-related changes. But the problem and what was so striking about the findings of the survey was that the general public didn't have an awareness. They thought they don't know the difference between MCI and normal aging, and they chalk it up to being normal aging and expect that over a certain age, you're just going to forget things and you might have some cognitive impairment. And that's not the case. That's why we need to step in and do some public education around it. We also want to make sure PCPs have the tools that they need in the primary care setting to be able to diagnose or at least make a recommendation for diagnosis. So that's a big thing that's come out of this report.
So if that's not the case, if we are 85 and kind of forgetting things, you can do things to alleviate that. That's not just, I'm older now, so I don't remember things. Like telling the same stories over and over again. Is that because there's not enough social interaction on other levels?
There you go. It could be exactly that. And that's why it's so important to get, you know, family or loved ones involved when you go for, when you visit your doctor to say, well, what's going on? Is this something, did the person always tell stories? Are they just bored? Are they, you know, rule out other factors and make sure that that's not what it is.
And I know that urinary tract infections can be a big one for forgetting things. Can you address that and how prevalent that is? I know you're not physicians, but.
Yeah, I don't, well, I'm obviously not a clinician, but yeah, I've heard that so much too. And that's a big thing. You want to rule that out because that can really cause confusion. If people have, sorry, an airplane taking off.
Oh, the joys of Zoom.
Has an infection or sleep issues. Sleep apnea, I know, can cause confusion, or you're not getting quality sleep. But yes, I know that even and patients that are maybe in the mid stages of Alzheimer's, they'll get a UTI and be off the rails for a day and or two, and then they correct it and it's, oh, they're back to where they were.
I often hear too that people say the minute an older person is starting to have these issues that they, it's an automatic leap, they're getting Alzheimer's, when really it could be a UTI or a vitamin deficiency or a drug interaction, especially. Honestly, I know a senior who is taking 30 medications.
Yeah,
30.
The cascade effect, right? You have all these side effects of drugs. That's why you really want to be careful and thoughtful and educate yourself on MCI and Alzheimer's. And that's exactly why we're here. We're here to do that. That's what the helpline, the 800-272-3900 number is for. Any concerns? And it's anonymous. You know, there's a lot of people, I think, there's a stigma related to this. If your mind isn't working, it's embarrassing. And I think that's a big part of why people don't seek help or take action.
So when someone calls the helpline, I'm sorry, what happens? Because I don't want people to think it's a hotline that you have to call if you're having an emergency, that you can just call and ask questions. No one's tracking it. It's just a good informational source.
You'll get put through to a dementia care expert, and they will talk. They'll answer any question from what's the difference between MCI and preclinical Alzheimer's? What's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And basic questions to to the crisis level. Sure.
We are sadly out of time. This has been so much wonderful information. I do appreciate it. The bottom line, I think, is don't let it go. If you're experiencing this, see your provider and talk about it, because it doesn't automatically mean that you have Alzheimer's. Drew Wyman, Amy Angelo, thank you for being here. And by the way, this is part one of a two-part series. Amy is staying with us to discuss caregiving and Alzheimer's. So you'll be hearing that episode next week. That's it for me. This is Senior Talk. Again, 1-800-272-3900. Thanks.